You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Earlier today, New York Governor David Paterson presented his latest budget proposals. Joining me now to look at what that entails is WNYC senior reporter Bob Henley. He also covered the National Governors Association meeting earlier this month in Philadelphia, where President-elect Barack Obama joined the governors to discuss the challenges that states are facing in these hard economic times. I'm pleased to welcome Bob back to the show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Governor David Paterson just rolled out his proposed budget, and he's done it a month early. Is that because there's been a history of long and drawn-out budget negotiations in Albany?
He can save on the state's financing of its borrowing and its entire budget if they manage to get their act together and have the discipline and pull it off.
Because it will start earlier than it normally does?
Exactly.
Is the state also hit by problems on Wall Street in terms of reduced revenue, job losses?
It's huge. I mean, we are in uncharted territories. You see, at this time of year, 30% of the state's revenue, tax revenue, comes from Wall Street. So the collapse of that is significant. And now we've seen it go much broader so that every segment of the economy is feeling it. When you see Treasury notes trading at zero or below, you're in a deflationary cycle where people just say, please, I want my money to be here. Forget rate of return.
But his proposal doesn't sound like the sort of thing a Democrat would suggest. It includes cuts to education, including school aid, higher education, SUNY and CUNY tuition, Medicaid and health care. He's closing youth facilities around the state, reducing the state workforce, and almost $250 million in aid to New York City.
Right. I think the logic here is that because we're in this unique circumstance, New York City is in relatively better shape than the rest of the state. Under Mayor Bloomberg and Christine Quinn, Speaker Quinn's leadership, they did sock a little bit of money away. They're a little insulated from some of the budget shocks, although they're having their own nightmare. You will see that in the education aid, it's very nuanced. They're talking about between a 3 and 13% cut, depending on what criteria the individual school district has. So that's a pretty nuanced scalpel there. So if you're a poor district or you have a high percentage of kids special needs, you're not going to get hit as hard. And the other thing here that this is, one of the things that's not on that list that you would expect a progressive Democrat would be to tax the super wealthy. And that's not on this list. And that's the thing he's getting hit hard for, because as a state senator from Harlem, he supported that kind of thing back when the state was jammed up back in the early part of 2000.
Which part of his proposal is likely to be the biggest sticking point with the state legislature?
Well, what's going to happen now, and this is it's like trying to change the fan belt with an engine running. What's happening at the local level is you're going to start seeing people try to appeal their appraisals for their property, because with foreclosures happening around the state, people can then take those foreclosure sales on their block and go back to the tax assessor and say, forget about it, it's not worth $300,000. That means dropping the property assessment and value. That puts the towns in the position of having to do two things. One, to cut costs, cut local school aid, which is where we get it from, property tax, or to boost property taxes. And so that's where you're going to see the suburban districts line up here, because they don't want to do this and have such a make it harder for homeowners to hold on to their homes with increasing, skyrocketing property taxes.
I'd assume that this process is made even more difficult because we have rapidly changing circumstances. Nobody knows what's going to happen
exactly in
the economy next month.
Well, it used to be, I've been doing these budget stories for 20 years, it used to be that it was a seasonal thing. You'd get it done, then you'd do features about how it was working. Now, this budget process is a gestalt that continues 24/7, even on the weekends when you have these investment houses. I mean, we've had a whole sector of the economy disappear overnight. All the high-flying investment houses are now very conservative banks.
New York has the largest Medicaid bill in the country. Is it possible to cut it back?
Well, this came up at the governor's conference, because this is one of the things that is a clear and present problem right now. For all states, because what's happening is as people lose their employment, because here in the United States we have this great idea of marrying your health care to your job, as they lose their employment, they're also losing their health care. Even before this financial tsunami, we saw 47 million Americans uninsured. Now that number is just ballooning. So now what they have to try to do is make Medicaid more effective, have it be more preventative so that it's not involved with emergency care, but create a system whereby people are getting wellness, if you will, it's as opposed to being, you know, being proactive, as opposed to the acute, very expensive emergency room care that has really blown the budget.
Was that National Governors Association meeting already scheduled for Philadelphia in December 2nd?
That was totally unique, and it was misreported, actually. This was something that President-elect Obama took upon himself to get rolling, and some 49 governors and governors-elect showed up. I did look in...
Who didn't show up?
I knew you'd ask me that question that I don't know. They wouldn't produce the list. I know Sarah Palin was there. And one of the things that came out of that was opening up a dialogue, which had never happened before between a president-elect in the history of the National Governors Association that Woodrow Wilson started when he was governor of New Jersey. A president-elect had never done this. Now, Roosevelt, however, did sit down with governors after he got in March, because at that point there were three states that were actually defaulting on their paper.
Well, after the NGA meeting, it was reported that Governor Patterson was headed to Washington to seek federal assistance. In this recession, are states now becoming more reliant on the federal government for help? Isn't that something of a switch, because governors in the past have usually tried to maintain their independence?
Well, one of the things here is that we're renegotiating the social contract in a major way, perhaps on a scale of what happened in the Great Depression, in the sense that we're trying to balance the interest of markets and capital versus the individual people and their communities. And then you also see the states renegotiating their relationship with the federal government. And then on the municipal and county level, the same thing's going on with the state and local government. So, you know, the federal government has a printing press when it comes to money. The states don't have a printing press. So when you're in a situation where you need stimulus and need it overnight and quickly, you have to go to the federal government. The problem is this thing is collapsing faster than we have the ability to deal with it. That's the problem. In some ways, it's kind of like I refer to it as a Katrinification of America. Like, we know aid is on the way, but it's taking a long time to identify the needs. And that's one of the things that was talked about at this conference, the governor's conference, that was potentially breakthroughs, the idea of really trying to do a better job at identifying what we need to do and acting on it in a quicker fashion. Because it is now, when it comes to infrastructure, it takes a lifetime to get something done.
Well, do you think that we would be seeing the sort of shift if it weren't for the financial problems that the nation is facing?
You know, they always, it's kind of tried to say crisis and opportunity, but there's no doubt without the collapse of this financial system, we would not see these opportunities to question longstanding relationships that were both unsustainable and uneconomical.
Were all the governors in agreement, Republicans and Democrats?
No, what was fascinating is you did see, it was kind of reminded me of like a redux of 1776, the musical. Here you have Governor Sanford of South Carolina, Republican, and Pawlenty from Minnesota, not talking so much about gay marriage or, you know, illegal immigrants, but talking about a new rhetorical line of argument and concern, which was, you know, you can't have too many bailouts. You can't have the government roll out so much money that you run the risk of doing the thing you want to prevent, which is depressing the currency and bringing on a depression.
Well, Mark Sanford has, as you say, been opposed to the idea of these financial stimulus bills, but didn't his state recently request a $15 million line of credit from the federal government?
I'm sure that they're all going to line. Ironically, South Carolina was one of the states that defaulted back during the Depression. So, I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to have all these states are funding themselves in a situation where the revenues they predicted even last quarter are lower than they were.
Do you think that the governors got through to Barack Obama, for instance? Has Governor Jennifer Granholm of Michigan influenced his approach to the auto industry?
I think that he has created this, he hasn't triangulated Congress, but what he has done is create a direct relationship with the governors of both parties, which is could actually transform the way that Washington and states work. And I mean, you have a situation where, you know, we were in that, you may remember when the big bailout that went out, that the first day Congress voted it down. It was that Monday. And then, you know, no one was responding to the grown-ups. There was a revolution. The left and the right met, and they overthrew the Wall Street interests and the Treasury Secretary. Well, then something happened on Tuesday. What was it that happened on Tuesday that made it so that it passed on Wednesday? There was an email from Schwarzenegger, Governor of California, to the Treasury Secretary saying, we're going to need help to make our payroll from the Treasury. And then all of a sudden people like said, this is for real. So this is where we really see the chance for transformation.
Well, infrastructure investment has been one of Obama's key proposals for jump-starting economies, but doesn't it usually take a long time to get infrastructure projects completed?
Well, exactly. As I was saying, that's one of the problems, is that we have a situational awareness problem, in that we know there's a problem, and yet we can't seem to develop the consensus to actualize. And it's ironic, because we have this 21st century technology but 19th century social systems in terms of communicating and building consensus. That has to change.
I'll be continuing this discussion with Elizabeth McNichol, senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project on the Center of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in just a moment. But I want to thank you, Bob, for being with us. Bob Hennelly, WNYC senior reporter. He went to the National Governors Association meeting, and he's been following David Paterson and what's going on in New Jersey very carefully.
Thanks so much, Leonard.
As I said, up next, a look at why budget deficits are such a problem for state governments and what role the recession is playing in the crisis. Then later on, film director Paul Schrader plus chef Tom Colicchio will be here to talk about whether TV shows like Top Chef have made people more or less likely to choose culinary careers. And we'll also celebrate 45 years of the New York Review of Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org.
WNYC is supported by Cornell Paper and Box Company, distributing corrugated boxes, die cuts, and bubble pack across the United States, Canada, and internationally, located across the historic Brooklyn waterfront. More at cornellrobbins.com. The Masterwork Chorus and Orchestra, presenting the holiday classic Handel's Messiah, conducted by Andrew McGill, Carnegie Hall, December 18th at 8 p.m. and December 21st at 2 and 8 p.m. Tickets at 212-247-7800 or at carnegiehall.org. Penguin Books, publisher of Listening is an Act of Love, radio producer Dave Isay selects the most memorable stories from the National StoryCorps Project to create a portrait of contemporary American life, now available in paperback.
You can double the return on your investment when you invest in WNYC's future. First, you'll support great radio, coverage of breaking news, intelligent talk shows, and inspiring cultural programs. Then in April, your gift will lighten your tax burden. Your donation now will strengthen our service to you in 2009. But there's just a short time left to make sure your contribution meets the December 31st tax deadline. Visit WNYC.org to make your gift now or call 1-888-376-WNYC. And thanks.
I just talked with Bob Hennelly about the major fiscal problems that New York is facing, but it's just one of 43 states that are running a deficit at the moment. Joining me now for a look at how various states are addressing their budget shortfalls is Elizabeth McNichol, a senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. I'm very pleased to welcome her to the show today. Hello.
Hi.
Why are state budget deficits a bigger problem than federal budget deficits?
Well, unlike the federal government, most states have laws requiring that they balance their budgets. So when revenues decline, which the current economy is causing state revenues to come in below what they projected, states have to either cut their spending or raise revenues to bring that budget back into balance.
They can't simply print more money or adjust interest rates and the like. Only the federal government could do that.
Right, right.
Well, there are seven states that are not in deficit. Which ones are they?
The states that aren't in deficit are Alaska, Texas, Wyoming, North Dakota. These are states that have mineral resources, so they were benefiting when oil prices were high. I think we may see some of them coming into deficit as we go along, given that the oil prices have now declined.
Most of them also have small populations, with the exception of Texas.
Right. That's correct.
What about state constitutional amendments that require budgets to be balanced? You mentioned that earlier. What effect have they had on the states that have passed them?
Well, states have to balance their budgets for a couple of reasons. All of them except Vermont, as you noted, have a law. Some are constitutional, some are statutory. The other reason that states have to balance their budgets is because they do borrow money for building, for cash flow reasons, and the price that they have to pay for that borrowed money is determined by the bond market and the bond rating agencies, who are also really concerned that states balance their budgets.
So does that mean that some governors will have no choice but to raise taxes or to generate revenue in some other way? I can't imagine what else they could do.
I think we're going to see the kinds of spending cuts that are really going to be unpopular and pretty much very difficult, if not impossible. And at that point, state governors and states are going to start looking to revenue increases as part of the solution.
Who's going to face a bigger problem in that regard, Republican governors or Democratic governors?
In terms of actually coming to the decision to raise taxes?
If you raise taxes, if a Republican governor has to raise taxes after he or she has promised never to do that, that could be a real problem. On the other hand, Democrats who cut services can upset a lot of people as well.
Right. I mean, no governor wants to raise taxes, whether they're a Republican or a Democrat. So I think it's in terms of politically or for popular reasons, it's an equal problem for both Democratic and Republican governors.
Didn't several states see their bonds affected by the credit crunch in the fall?
Yeah, there were some states that were having trouble even getting their bonds sold, which was causing cash flow problems. California is one of the states that was in the news because of that. More recently, I think that things have eased enough that states are able to borrow money, but the rates that they have to pay for it are higher than they would have been a year ago.
Well, California and a few other states were in trouble before the recession began. Were they already facing the same problems that most of the others are facing now?
So in some cases, the economic problems started to hit them earlier, the housing crisis problems, or Michigan, for example, I don't think ever really came out of recession. Has been in problem because of the problems with the auto industry. In other cases, states may have used one-time monies to get through the last recession at the beginning of the early 2000s. But for most of the states, this is really a problem that's not of their making. It's a result of the economic downturn and the recession that's causing their revenues to decline.
And we've been hearing about reduced holiday spending, so the states will be hit by reduced revenue from sales taxes as well. But I've heard that California could run out of cash by February. What would happen then? What would that mean for its residents?
Well, that would mean that they would stop making payments to, say, hospitals, to vendors, that they possibly would have to not make payments to the school districts, so it would hit services that people care about. Most of state budgets are spent on health care or on education. So things that could happen is, school districts might have to make cutbacks mid-year. One thing that we're already seeing and that would get worse is most likely tuition would go up at public institutions within the state.
State colleges
and universities, to make up for the state aid that they had built into their budget that they wouldn't be receiving.
Usually you can project into the near future, but isn't this all a lot more difficult for states to address because the situation seems to be changing so quickly?
It does seem to be getting worse faster than we might have expected, but some of this you can predict. If you look at the recession at the early part of the 2000s, which was not as deep, even that recession caused state fiscal problems that went on for two and a half years after the recession ended, and that was an 8-month recession. Now we're into our 12th month of a recession that people aren't predicting the end of yet. So I would expect that state budget problems are going to go on for the next 2 or 3 years, unfortunately.
During the last economic downturn in 2003, the federal government provided the states with $20 billion in aid. Can states count on something like that happening again?
There certainly is a lot of discussion. I'm in Washington by Congress and by the president-elect of providing aid to states. And it makes sense because, as we noted, states have to balance their budgets. So whether they raise taxes or cut spending, that's going to cause further problems for the local economy.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson not much before the vote on the bailout bill was passed, saying that California might need a $7 billion emergency loan.
And that's the $7 billion emergency loan would have been to fill in kind of a short-term cash flow loans. Many states, especially large states like California, borrow money during the year to meet their bills and then pay it back in a relatively short time period, because their tax revenues come in now a lot in April from the income tax, and other revenues don't come in smoothly through the year. So that's a sort of a different issue, and that was very much the credit crunch affecting California and some of the other states, that they needed money quickly for a short time that they would have then paid back, and they were asking the federal government to step in and be that lender for them.
But how much of California's problems are the result of Proposition 13, which I guess is 30 years old now? It caps property tax rates at 1% of the property value, which means that the state will always have a problem in tough times of raising enough cash to pay its bills. Values are falling as well
right.
in California.
It's a problem for maintaining adequate support for the schools, because one of the ways that California dealt with Prop 13, I mean, part of the way they dealt with it is to cut spending for schools and reduce their support. But the other thing they did was that the state at the time was not in recession and was able to step in and fill in some of the gap, because the Prop 13 restricted the amount that local governments can raise to pay for taxes. Governor Schwarzenegger now is proposing cutting back on that state aid that was promised over the years to local governments to help them support their school spending.
Would it be possible for a California governor to try to reverse Proposition 13, which has been called the third rail of California politics?
Right. I mean, I guess in a crisis, you never know what could be proposed. I don't know that that's the direction they would go. I do know the California governor has now just put together a tax commission to take a look at the overall financing structure of California to see what could be done to try to prevent some of the preventable problems in the future.
In New York, a major bill is that we have the largest Medicaid rolls in the country. Are state-run programs like Medicaid the first to suffer from cutbacks?
When states cut back, they often cut back on Medicaid, on health care initially, and part of the reason for that is kind of a practical reason. Those are funds that go out often on a monthly basis, so when states start to see budget problems, they want to cut back on spending to try to deal with those problems up front.
Have you been surprised that Governor Patterson has refused so far to propose a rise in income taxes?
I think I don't know how the governor is thinking about this, but I do think it absolutely makes sense. If you look at the economic arguments, as I noted, when you cut spending, you're taking money out of the state's economy. Those are funds that go to local institutions, go to businesses, to service providers, and to people. So you're reducing the demand. You can make the economic downturn worse. If, on the other hand, close the part of the gap by raising taxes, in particular taxes on high-income people, that will have less of an effect on the state economy, because some of that money is not money that was being spent in New York. It's money that was being spent out of state, or money that would be coming out of savings.
So if you were the governor, you might try to get through some kind of tax increase, at least at the on the very rich.
I think that's a really important part of the solutions in any of the states.
My guest is Elizabeth McNichol, Senior Fellow with the State Fiscal Project of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Are the states that are in the biggest trouble all the ones with the bigger populations and urban centers, like California, Illinois, and New York?
The states, if you look at their budget gaps as a share of their budget, certainly California and then New York and New Jersey and Connecticut are being hit by the financial crisis, but Florida, Nevada, Arizona are other states that are also being hit really hard, especially by the foreclosure problems and the housing crisis.
And Kansas is facing a budget gap that's 14.5% of the general fund budget. That's the fifth highest proportion in the country. I never would have thought of Kansas as being in danger. Is there some industry that I don't know about? I thought corn was doing very well these days.
The farm states came into this recession a little later than others, but I mean, partly the decline in the gas price ripples through to that. This is pretty much widespread across the country. Basically, what happened is, as people's assets decline, so the value of their house is declining. Now the value of their savings, in many cases, is declining. So people stop spending. Most of the states depend on the sales tax for a significant share of their revenues. So once people stop buying and retail sales go down, state revenues are declining.
In some states, like Indiana, there are automatic tax hikes in business taxes when fund levels become endangered. Is that a good approach?
I think automatic changes are, aside from possibly automatic withdrawals from a rainy day fund, which exists to fill in budget gaps, I think it makes more sense for the governor, for the legislature to sit down and take a look at the options and say, you know, should we be cutting spending? Let's prioritize what we really need to do or where we might be able to cut back. Should we be raising revenues? Are we going to get help from the federal government? So you can buy a little time and wait for that.
Some states have made it a point to keep their unemployment taxes very low. Does that mean that state unemployment funds are at risk of running out of money, especially with the rise in unemployment claims?
A number of states' unemployment trust funds are in a bit of trouble now. The federal government does have a system to help with that, so there is a backstop there. But that is a real concern that that state taxes, employer taxes, have been declining, and so the states weren't able to build up a big enough reserve to cope with the recession.
When we talk about this, we're talking state by state, aren't we? Will the same policies work for all states?
No. I mean, there's some sort of general principles to follow, but every state's set of spending needs is different. Every state's tax structure is different. So it's hard to come up with a kind of cookie-cutter tax or spending plan for each state.
Do you think there'll be more pressure in a state like New Hampshire, which has had a history of low or no taxes, to consider raising them?
There may be talk in New Hampshire of looking for new revenue sources as the reality hits, as states right now are sitting down, the governors, like the governor of New York, are putting together their budgets to propose to the legislature for next year. And I think that's where we're really going to see, you know, is it just K-12 schools that are being cut back, or is university spending support being cut back? Are we cutting off health care for people who are losing health care because they're losing their jobs? And when those decisions are clear, I think then people will start looking at both sides of the budget, even in New Hampshire.
State deficits are likely to total $100 billion next year. Is this a problem that will continue to linger even if the economy were to recover relatively quickly?
That's what we saw in the early 2000s, so the recession of 2001. That recession ended before the end of 2001, but the worst years for the state budget shortfalls were 2003 and 2004.
And why is that? Doesn't more money start coming in right away?
People tend not to get their jobs back really quickly, and so when employment is depressed, then that reduces income tax collections and also consumption tax collections.
So the prognosis doesn't sound all that hopeful, does it? You're really depressing me, Elizabeth.
I'm sorry. Things are going to be grim for a little while. It could be a couple of years, I think. I mean, and this is really a deep recession. It's a deep problem. But there are some solutions. One is that states that have a rainy day fund, now is the time to use it, because that can sort of put money into the economy. And there is real hope for federal assistance, both with the Medicaid program, sending extra dollars to try to help the states cope with increased Medicaid enrollment as people lose their jobs, as well as the possibility of infrastructure spending to try to jolt the economy.
Well, it took the country over 10 years to get past the Depression. Do you think we know a lot more now? Are we less likely to make some of the mistakes that kept the Depression going as long as it did?
I think so. I gotta hope so. I'm not an economist.
Elizabeth McNichol is a senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.